budget restoration. All of you should have an agenda. We're going to have public hearings and work sessions on most, if not all, of the bills located. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4073, which establishes the Independent Public Corporation known as Master Settlement. AFCAC Corporation, anyone wishing, on the committee, anyone wishing to testify on behalf of House Bill 4073? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4073 and open a work session.
Mr. Representative Devlin. Mr. Chairman, could I have 60 seconds to ascertain the location of two other members?
I believe it's your members' obligation to be here on time, and we are under some time constraints, so we will do the somewhat less controversial bill first, and hopefully that they give us the courtesy of their presence.
Okay.
Mr. Well, Chair,
you are. Representative Shadow.
Thank you. The bill, as drafted, still has the blanks that were, it was introduced with. We prepared to fill those in with conceptual amendments in this special, in this meeting. And if so, what's our target here? I think we're looking at page 4, line 18, being the dollar amount, and page 6, line 42, being the years of maturity. And maybe we should have Treasury up there just to make sure that whatever dollar amount we put in just corresponds precisely.
I believe that's a good idea.
So, yeah, but there was
some. Is Treasury is not present? Is anyone from Treasury? We'll go as good as we can, as fast as we can, as well as we can. Let's have a report from Mr. Yates.
House Bill 4073, Richard Gates is legislative resident. Sure. The bill lays out a structure primarily aimed at one that can be used in a existing sort of market, similar to structures that have been used by other states. What it does is to set up a separate public corporation. Line 28 on the first page of the bill, corporations defined, means a master settlement asset corporation established by Section 3. And a lot of what's done in the bill here is to make sure that that is a separate public entity, not the state agency. So that's a lot of the sections refer to that. What this bill does then is to authorize the sale of the payments under the Master Settlement Agreement to that corporation and directs that corporation to borrow in the amount which is not specified or representative notice. But you talked about amounts of $100 million or roughly. To borrow that amount, pay it to DAF and direct DAF to pay that into the state school fund. The portion of the master settlement payment that would be required for this, and the testimony on the committee earlier was about 77%, which they thought they could pay off in 5 years. Once the bonds are paid off, then that revenue stream reverts back to the state. The corporation is involved and it's invested back to the state. This sets up the treasurer as a member of the board of directors and directs the treasurer to appoint two members of the public to administer this corporation and sets the state treasurer as the executive director of the corporation. I don't know how much more detail you would like to be going through, but I see you have
Any questions for Mr. Yates at this point in time? Yeah. Representative Hayden.
Mr. Yates, you say, where's the section that says that after these funds have been paid off, that they revert, the cash flow reverts to the state?
Fairly early. I'm trying not to be able to put my finger right on it, but it has the first reference to the section. That's the solution to the program. All right. Page four. Actually, it would start on page three, 10, line 45, 10A. The corporation may be dissolved as provided in section 13. And then paragraph D, I guess. Upon dissolution of the corporation, the assets and the revenues of the corporation vest in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Yates, why is the permissive language in there?
Well, there are other reasons that this regards the dissolving of the corporation. It may be dissolved, but it will be dissolved upon. Again, we have to go back then to the section 13 that it is, which describes the condition section 13.5, which allow it to be dissolved. And in that subsection 5 on line 32, it says the legislative assembly may not dissolve the corporation until a date that is 1 year and 1 day after the date when all securities and ancillary agreements of the corporation have been paid in full or otherwise discharged.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Yates, is it your opinion that after this obligation has been taken care of, that cash flow can be used for other purposes?
That cash flow will be the property of the state to do with it as it sees fit.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yates. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We won't recess, we'll take a slight pause.
A pause and
refreshes. I don't know about refreshes, but for Ms. Richardson to get an urgent phone call.
Could funds that are dedicated, could that be a standing corporation and funds be given into it later on to do other state services, corrections, or something other than schools?
Not without some legislation to amend the purpose.
All right, so this is specifically for schools, this corporation, this agreement, this master settlement?
No. For the purpose of issuing bonds,
all right.
The statute itself directs that the net proceeds of those bonds go into the state school fund.
All right. So even though you use the corporation as a vehicle, you have to change the if you wanted to, in future years, if you wanted to dedicate the funds to some other entity, you'd have to change some of the bylaws.
There are better people to answer that question. My off the top is. If you wanted like to continue that and borrow more money in the future, if that's what you want. There's a couple of issues that you need to be concerned about, and that is maintaining the tax exempt status of the bond. By putting the money into the state school fund, you sort of guarantee that, as far as you know. if you were then later to borrow money from some other source and use that for general fund purposes, say, and lose the tax-exempt status, that creates some complications, I think, but I'm not sure it would require an amendment of the bylaws, but it's certainly really good for interest rates and the problems of marketing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Frederick. Thank you, Richard. Thank you for joining us. Harrison, you want to go first?
Mr. Chair, Harrison McConnell from the Office of Legislative Counsel. I was listening and I heard Representative Hayden's question about protecting state interest in the payments under the Master Settlement Agreement. So I wanted to come in and sort of add to what Mr. Yates said. Certainly the provision about the corporation assets vesting in the state once it's dissolved is part of that protection, but I think part of the protection also is built into Section 6 and the way we structure the sale land. We're not really offering the corporation an unlimited interest in the stream of payments under the Master Settlement Agreement. We're offering a portion of the payments under the Master Settlement Agreement that are calculated to cover the corporation's financing costs, operating expenses, and to provide the amount of money and net proceeds that you are going to apply to the programmatic purpose, in this case, the state school fund. So we're not offering them. I mean, was that clear? I'll stop there. That's clear.
And that's a part of your concerning question. Thank you for being so attentive. Hold on a second. We might not be done with your good counsel. Representative Shetter.
Well, thank you. If you look at Section 7, there, it appears to be a fairly broad statement of corporate powers. But I guess taking those in context with the rest of the bill that specifically direct what this corporation is to do with the proceeds and how it is to apply those, I guess, Harrison, would it be fair to characterize this corporation as something in the nature of, a trustee under a trust deed or something where it really does what the bill directs that it do and that it has limited powers because of the limited purpose for which it's been created and the directives that are given to it with regard to these proceeds of these bonds and how they're to be invested?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cheverly, I'm going to take a shot at this and Kate may want to add something to what I say, but I believe that you may soon see an amendment that has an explicit line limiting the corporation to the powers, rights, and duties granted in this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative, indeed, we were now working on amendments to these. There are multiple amendments that are addressing some of those issues. As you know, that was a pretty complex piece of legislation, so it had to be reviewed also by the Department of Justice to make sure that we're protecting the Master Settlement Agreement. And indeed, one of those amendments is just that, to make sure that it's clear what's authorized and what's not for the corporation.
Do we have any idea when those amendments will be ready?
Mr. Chair, I would say as soon as I can get that down and get started on them, probably less than 3 hours.
Mr. Chair, this is apparently a $250 million deal, and it's pretty complex. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Cheverly, there are a lot of lawyers calling me.
I'm being
what this product
is. I'm being facetious.
But what time on it?
Yeah. Actually, I think Kate knew about 10 o'clock Friday night.
That changes everything.
Thank you.
Just after football.
Well,
Harrison, don't let me slow you down. Be careful, that door swings awfully hard.
Before he goes,
Harrison, hold on.
Is he working on amendments for dollar amount and term of years? So do we need to give him some direction there?
Representative,
do you have a question? Yes, I do. Does it require Harrison to be? Potentially. I'm sorry, Harrison, you were that close. I know, you're almost out of here.
There is a possibility of being asked for an amendment at a herd lane, too. We all know that is a possibility. Should he be working on that now, too? It would make the things flow easier at the time that we needed them.
Not to my
case. I'm talking about process, not what the policy will actually be. I would just make a suggestion that maybe you might want to think about the possibility of 100 million also. Just so if we get there, we can do a quick run and help up a procedural problem.
Mr. Mr. Chair. The maturity length that we have inspection is very much tied to the amount. And I do want to go on record saying that we may need to put the outside maturity length a little farther than the actual repayment period, just to provide some cushion because of the volatility of the MSA payment. We don't want to be in default, and I just want that understood, that what that number finally reads there, that's definitely an outside number, and it will be beneficial for the state and for Treasury in order to get the best deal on these, that we allow enough room there. So we're trying to provide flexibility with all the factors, and once we move one part, we need to move others in order to get the best deal on these. So I want that clear.
So the net result of that discussion that we need to have the amount and the maturity, the payback time before we send Harrison down.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we need to know what your net proceeds are. And then we're asking for the flexibility to set the maturity length to the most advantageous for the state's purpose.
Thank you.
If I may add to that, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, and responsible for the representative base, the way we structured the draft, those parts are very simple. If we just drop in a number, a dollar amount in terms of net proceeds, if we change the maturity, maximum maturity period, those are very easy drop in for us to handle as a main plan, but I do have some, fairly minor, but a number of changes that I need to make in response to the discussions we've had this morning.
Well, on the bonding bill, I think we can accommodate that time.
And we may have them sooner than 3 hours. I wanted to give myself a little bit of room.
For 3 hours.
Is this LC hours or normal?
Or legislative
hours? Mr. Chair, if they're billable hours, he should be back within 45 minutes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, if I understand that question, that's why I've given myself more time than I think.
That's 3 hours from 12:51, Harrison.
All right, sir.
Mr. Chair, then, if I may inquire, the number that you are sending to LC for net proceeds, so that we can make a determination on what the maturity is.
We are assuming it's 250.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, respectfully, I understand that you just said it's 250. I think Representative Bates made the point that there may be additional amendments, and just as a courtesy, I restate that for emphasis.
Understood. Okay. We will recess the work session on Representative Williams.
I believe that Representative Devlin.
Oh, no, that's the same comment.
Okay.
Let's separate these two. but thank you for pointing that out. We will recess the work session on House Bill 4073, and we will. a public hearing on House Bill 4074. Anyone in attendance wishing to testify on House Bill 4074? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 4074. Mr. Lyons.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
You've got shoes and socks on. You're doing zero down today, buddy.
I know. House Bill 4074 was the LC-22-1 that you approved in discussion last night. There was discussion about concerns on the allocation of money, and directed staff to draft an amendment. You have before you 4074 is the LC-22-1 that you approved last night. The dash 2 amendment that you have before you, let me walk you through the points which that would accommodate.
I do not see the dash. Does everyone else have it?
Yes,
sir. Only reason you don't have it. I'm just asking. Just close my eyes and I'll share Representative Johnson.
So it's $1, one part was $1.
Remember last night, the bill was drafted would have put about $1.7 million in cultural trust fund. You wanted that amended to about $1.25 million in this trust for cultural development account, the balance to the general fund, and a balance of $250,000 going to Morrow County, leaving a net of $1 million in the trust for cultural development account. So if you look at line 4 on the dash 2 amendment, it changes the percentage from 77% to the general fund to 83%. This would put about $6.2 million in the general fund out of that $7.4 net proceeds. The next line changes the amount that goes to the Trust for Cultural Development from 23% of net proceeds to 17%. We estimate this would result in about $1.25 million going into the Trust for Cultural Development account. Now, the reason this percentage is not hard numbers is because there are no sureties as to the net proceeds, but this is our best estimate based on what we know at this stage of the sales price we've spent on. The next section amends the current section of statute that says if a space age industrial park is sold and more than $250,000 from the proceeds is deposited in the Trust for Cultural Development account prior to January 5th of 03, then there's allocated to the e-board out of that account an amount equal to 20% of the expected $1.25 million is $250,000. 20% of the proceeds deposited in the account up to a maximum of $250,000. This is in the event that the net proceeds are somewhat less than initially expected and the Trust for Cultural Development gets less than $1.25 million, then the amount that would be available to transfer to Morrow County is reduced proportionally. So it does put a cap at $250,000. Those are the amendments that we discussed last night when we tried so hard to conceptually amend the LC and the Scott. There is one other amendment here that wasn't discussed, and I would direct your attention to page 2, line 7. And this goes back to your discussions in the negotiations about budget reduction and allocations to counties for county fairs of lottery funds. It was understood, my understanding is that the reductions to the allotments for county fairs would be considered a permanent reduction for purposes of roll up in the next biennium. There's a section of statute that says that the county fairs will get an amount equal to 1% of the net proceeds of the lottery, not to exceed $1.53 million annually. This amendment changes that, takes out the $1.53 and puts in about half of that amount, $765,000 annually. This then puts it in law that the cap on the amount that would be distributed, and my understanding is that it's consistent with the agreement that you came to in discussing this. This lacking this, then the county could come in the roll-up procedure and the budget request, and then we go through the same process of reducing, having to reduce them to be consistent, or reduce the appropriations of the, in the budget process.
Yeah, and go ahead,
Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I understand that what I, because I'm sure I haven't read it. That's okay. This makes the cuts to county fairs permanent.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes. To the extent that it was agreed upon, saves about $1.5 million for by any.
Yeah, and I think I'm sharing Representative Johnson's concern here, and so I guess I would urge the committee not to focus on permanent or not permanent in this reduction package, and specifically in this bill. There's a legislature that convened January 7th or 11th. 13th, thank you, Representative. And I think what the issue is at that juncture and before that legislature will be to determine what is the permanence or non-permanence of these adjustments.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think as we have all seriously taken the responsibility to try to help our state through what we hope is a short-term economic crisis. We've asked for a lot of sacrifice in a lot of areas, and I wholeheartedly subscribe to your thought that permanency could be revisited at some point. We are dealing with what we hope is a period that we will move through and out of.
Not only that, but as you were a part, and I was a part, several of us on this committee were a part, we were looking at a very rapidly ticking clock as some of these issues were discussed. And so as part of the package, and this is a package, I would just urge the committee to take, not necessarily with a grain of salt, but with a thoughtful look towards the future, the difference in permanent versus one-time cuts that were somewhat arbitrarily, if not capriciously assigned.
If I may add something, Mr. Chair, because the governor is required by law to submit a current law budget, this would reduce the amount that is presented simply a 7-year and the over 3x8, but it doesn't seem to take the change. But this would then, if the law is this, doesn't change, then the current law could be chosen.
This is a roll-up issue, and is this really where we wanted, question I believe you're asking, really where we wanted to address, roll-up issues as opposed, to balance the budget or primary function for coming into special sessions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? I would submit that, perhaps it is not, but we are here to make decisions that were made in a very compressed time frame.
That's my concern. I just don't want to close the door forever on county fairs having the opportunity to come back and revisit the opportunity to get their funding restored.
I believe you are on record and I am on record, and if we beat this horse to death anymore, there will be no county fairs because they can't have animals. Could someone move the proceeding forward while I take a phone call?
Is there anyone else that wishes to comment on the dash one? Representative Hayden, are you
speaking? Yes.
No, that is all right.
Or dash two, excuse me.
Have we moved the dash one? Have they not moved the dash two yet? Are they ready to move the dash two?
Is anyone out there wishing to comment on the dash two?
Are we the worst person?
The chair will entertain the motion.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 47.
It's been moved to put the dash 2 amendment into House Bill 474. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair, only to offer my same comments as Chair Representative Johnson, strictly on the county fairs, and then I think we, those of us who've been around the back for them every term that I've been here, we're ready to go again as soon as we have this little hiccup ironed out.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could also reiterate that we have gone to that every time that I had the opportunity to do so, and I know my colleagues have too, for the county fairs, and I would hope that, and I know that, we will be there again in the discussion in the O3 session.
Seems to me we started these issues with regard to the county fairs with no funding every session.
Yes.
And at least now, you know, we're starting with some. So I don't know what we're all worried about.
We have a motion on the floor.
Representative,
just so I can be on record as going to bat as much as you and Representative Johnson and Representative Morgan and Representative Federley. And if Representative Hayden wants to be in
front of Representative Bates,
we're all going on.
We all love our county fair.
We're all for county fair.
Sorry to be cutting you. Move on.
We have a motion to move the dash 2s into House Bill 4074. Is there any objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is passed.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Shetter.
House Bill 4074 has amended to the floor of the two-pass recommendation.
We have a motion to move House Bill 4074 as amended with the dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have discussion on the motion? Do we have objections? Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Hayden, would you consent to carry that bill on the floor?
That's quite all right. You look like the perfect individual to carry the bill that sets county fairs and my passion.
I know.
Let me steal it from you on the floor.
All right.
We will close the work session on House Bill 374. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill. I'm not sure I know what we're doing. Which one's your phone? We will open a public hearing on House Bill 4076. House Bill 4076 is a tax bill that is the straight-up version of what we're proposing. Is there anyone who wishes to testify? We will close the public hearing on 4076. We will close the work session on the public hearing on 4076. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 4078. Is there anyone in attendance that we should testify on House Bill 4078?
Mr. Chair, before Mr. Rose testifies, may I ask a procedural question?
Hold on half a second. Representative Johnson.
I know that there are amendments that may be offered to these bills, and I was just trying to ask what the Chair's intention was, given that there is a little bit of a lag in drafting time, and there may be others that are wanting to come forward to testify. I just didn't know what the chair's wish was in terms of acting on these votes.
The chair's wish is to get them out of this committee.
Okay. Would the chair then entertain a brief recess to find out how long the lag is in drafting time out of legislative sample? If there are amendments that are going to be offered to make sure that those amendments have a chance to be heard?
The chair would be happy to accommodate you as a calling going down to legislative council.
Okay.
And pending the report back. We're on timeline here. I mean, it's hurry up, let's go. And I understand there's differences of opinions on these things, but we have a deadline, and it's today.
Mr. Chair, respectfully, I think we're all acutely aware of that, but if there is going to be an opportunity to have a thoughtful public debate about all of the different options that are being offered, I just was trying to get a feeling for whether or not there would be the possibility that we have committee discussion and public testimony on all of the different offers.
There is, and I have accommodated you if you would like to go to the LC or use the phone. You're happy to do that, but I'm not going to read that to the committee. This is scheduled. Mr. Rose.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose, Confederation of School Administrators. May I ask a question about what is this total revenue off of 4070? Is this the 395?
This is
12 million for the first session. I'm just trying to
ask you to give a report on neglected policy.
Okay. Could I hear that first?
Chair, this, the 4078 contains the language that was originally in your LC-17 on the personal income tax rate. And as you recall, the revenue impact in 01-03 from that measure was $395 million. So it has the $395 from personal income tax. It also includes some language in sections 3 and 4 on waiving any under withholding that may be the result of the higher rates that are now applied after the fact, an issue that you talked about. It also imposes a surtax on corporate income and excise tax. So this would be in addition to the 395. The 5% surtax we estimate would be $12 million, so the total from the bill for the estimated impact would be $407 million. The language here does impose a surtax, which is a little different than how we were thinking of it, but it would be equivalent to a 6.93% corporate rate. Corporations now basically all pay a 6.63%.
Madam Chair, did we have any committee amendments to this? I thought we were anticipating the same set of amendments as for 4076, I think the one, for instance, making it revenue neutral with the inclusion of the corporate. Are there any committee amendments?
We do not have amendments to. We have the amendments to 4076, but not to 4078. Some of the things that you talked about as amendments to 4076 are in 4078, for example, the penalties. There are two other amendments that we had to 4076. One would reduce the length of the rate adjustment to 2 years, and that is not in here. It's something you can conceptually amend. The other difference amendment we had prepared for House Bill 4076 would be to reduce the rate of a 7% bracket from not increasing it to 7.3, but increasing it to 7.2. And that would have the effect of generating $397 million for 0103 rather than the 407. So that amendment was prepared for 4076, but not for this. But again, it's one you can conceptually amend. And the other issue that is different, although it's the same concept, was on the corporate, we asked for an amendment that would have a temporary bump in the corporate rate to 6.93% for 4076, but in 4078, they came back to it as a surtax. So our recommendation would be to use the language we have for 4076. And that would also be the recommendation of the rest of
Mr. Chair, would that be another conceptual amendment into 4078?
Yes, we have that language that we prepared as an amendment for 4076. So that language is there.
Okay. So we have three issues that we have amendments for, that they review the amendments that were proposed to 4076, but they would be equally applicable to this bill. And those three issues are 2 years or 3 years, the two issues relating to revenue neutrality. One reduces the rate from 7.3 to 7.2 on personal, and one adds a corporate income tax aspect to this.
Yes, the third issue is to make a temporary adjustment in the corporate income tax rate rather than the language that's currently in 4078, which makes it a sure tax. The revenue impact is the same. But we think in terms of administering it and understanding it, the rate adjustment would be better.
Mr. Chair, back to you.
Are you still, excuse my absences, Mr. Wells, are you still got time taking questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm saying yes.
That's the most intelligent thing I've ever heard.
Please, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Convention of Oregon School Administrators. And Mr. Chair, I don't know where we are in the total process, but I want to be clear that you understand we believe that we should and you should enact the measure to raise the revenue necessary to balance the budget. We would like you to do that rather than refer. We believe we'd have a very difficult time on a November election for a variety of reasons. There are a lot of measures out there. There are a lot of money measures out there. A large number, probably a significant number of your colleagues will be campaigning against the measure. And we want a fair shot at raising the revenue. Therefore, we don't want to be on the November ballot. We would suggest that you add to this a date certain for an election if it is referred by a government decision. And that's not new information. I know you know that. And that could be done. We would like the latest date possible and still be able to collect the revenue. And I don't know what that date is, but you have experts that can tell you. And we believe if it did get referred and we had a clean shot at the issues that we have, we could be successful with an election, which we would not be if you just referred something in November. To the three-year issue, we encourage you to stay with the 3 years that was in the original discussion. We believe that this is only one step toward some permanent long-term funding for schools, and that you're here next session, you will be addressing where we go for stability and adequacy over the long term, and that will necessitate a measure to the people. We believe that we need the three-year time frame to have a decent shot at an education campaign and let the people of Oregon weigh in on these issues in a way in which they can make a good decision, informed decision. And the money that's available in the third year bridges us through the next biennium, allowing that vote to be sometime in no earlier than the spring of 2004 and maybe even the fall of 2004 if you do this. If you don't do the 3 year, you're going to have a very difficult time delaying that discussion that long. And what we're after is that elusive thing that's been around since I got into business, and that's long-term stability, adequate, all those words. And we think the chaos that's come out of the current economic problems we've had at setting the seed bed, that we have a shot at having that debate and can come out of it, and hopefully that you will allow that to happen in that manner. So to the bill specifically, we would prefer a straight-up vote. We would prefer that it be a 3 year rather than a 2 year. We would prefer that if you do the straight up vote, you add the clause or the paragraph that says if it's referred by the people, here's the date you're going to do that, so it's not put off for 2004. That won't do any of us any good. if you do this expecting it to be part of the solution, then it's put off till November 2004. Everybody makes the answer. With that, answering the question.
Sure.
Let the chair just make a statement and then certainly entertain any questions, but not necessarily for the policy reasons you discussed, Ozzy, but the chair is of the opinion that at this juncture, at this late hour, that whatever timelines we have down here, whatever the rates are we have down here, okay, yeah, let's include the corporate. Let's get both these bills out. Let's get into the floor of the House. Let's see which, if either, survives the gauntlet of the red and green light. And then if there's changes, tweaks, improvements, whatever, let's do both on the Senate side. I mean, I guess this would be as much of a committee as anybody else. There are, I think, expectations on many people's parts. So I guess I'm agreeing with you on the 3-year portion that you're agreeing to. Is there something we can do quickly? Fine. But, you know, we need these votes. There's all this rhetoric, right? You know, which is better, which is best. We need to affirm or deny the concept as to if this is a viable solution or not first. Anyway, having said that, any questions for us?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, I think the 3 years is fine with that. We toyed with the 2 years last night, and I'm okay on 3 years. I guess what I hear you saying there in terms of the straight-up vote is that you prefer a February or March election to a November or December election?
Mr. Chair,
isn't that the reality we're dealing with?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shetterly, what I prefer is that you straight-up vote, balance the budget, and go home.
But as you know, it doesn't end there.
Excuse me. The second half of that is if you place in this measure, you straight up vote it, and you place in the measure that if it's referred by the people, the vote will be a date certain.
February or March.
Well, I don't think you can be that late and collect the taxes, but I don't know the answer to that. I don't think you can wait until February or March. I mean, pretty soon this whole thing is going to be moot because we'll be somewhere in the future. But early January, I think, is possible.
You've got a timeline of 90 days. From signing day to collect the signatures, followed by 14 days to gather to verify the signatures, followed by the ballot title, summary, fiscal impact statement, publication of the voter pamphlet, distribution, followed by the ballots. You're not going to get it done in January. It's going to be February or March before you get to an election day. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Legal counsel is February 11th is the earliest date.
Can you still collect the taxes if we vote that late?
Mr. Chair, if I may, yeah. The forms that have to be reprinted, the instructions that have to be reprinted, and any returns already filed before that date would have to be amended. Yep.
Taking shots straight up, then.
You see, you prefer the February election?
Mr. Chair, I can share it. The November election, I think we don't win.
How about December?
Pardon?
How about December?
I haven't heard that. Can you refer directly to December?
Sure.
Talk about that.
That's cool. Yeah. Obviously, what I'm thinking is, you push this thing into the next year, there is some logistical issues. I mean, early filers, what do you do with early filers?
The same thing, you get everybody making a mistake, the state corrects it for.
And, or maybe we can incent them, then the time value of money would make up the dash.
I've not had any discussions about directly to someday. I'd like to talk about that with some other people, but my preference is that you balance the budget and go home. If you can do that.
We need a constitutional amendment to take out the referendum, bust the referendum.
Any other questions for Ozzy?
Mr. Chair, I have really a question about where we are procedure. At the beginning of the testimony, I heard a discussion of conceptual amendments, which were significant to this bill. I don't think they're significant. Am I led to believe those are going to be amendments made to the bill before it goes to the floor, or is that just a discussion?
I did not hear the amendment about getting distracted by people who are trying to move this process along.
I understand.
In a positive.
I assume that was a discussion, not actual active request for conceptual amendments at that point.
My understanding was that we had a discussion of the possible amendments that could be offered to the bill if the chair chose to intervene.
Thank you. That's a clarification. So there would be significant discussion about that, and alternative amendments might be offered at the same time.
You know, all I'm saying is we're rapidly approaching the time when discussing amendments, discussing the bill, discussing anything will be somewhat meaningless words in terms of time.
We've been here for 9 days. It'll take a couple hours to get it right.
My only answer. I mean, if there are ways to get it right on the Senate side. We have to have a vessel and a vehicle.
You have more confidence in the Senate than I do, sir.
Well, if the Senate isn't going to go there, then you know, somehow we have to see. Any other questions for Mr. Rose? Thank you, sir. I believe we are joined by Representative Crawford. Would you like to come forward?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deborah Crawford. I'm the House Democratic Leader, and I appreciate you allowing me the opportunity to come testify before you today. Because I'm not really sure where we are in this process, I'm going to start with the bill at hand, but I'm also going to touch briefly, if it is okay with the chair, on each of the bills before you, because it's, in my mind, all part of one plan. And I'm proposing several changes to the bills that you are discussing today in committee, and we've been trying to get the amendments drafted as quickly as possible, but I don't know that they've all been drafted. I will start with House Bill 4078, which is my understanding the one that's before you right now. It is the pleasure of myself and the House Democratic Caucus if you were to leave House Bill 4078 as is. We believe that it reflects a balanced approach to financing a temporary revenue measure. We believe that since the November ballot is no longer an option, a straight-up vote is the only responsible solution at this point. I will touch briefly on the other bills that you have before you. House Bill 4073, that's you want to start? Excuse me.
Representative Kafoy, were you in the room when the discussion with Mr. Rose occurred about a December election?
Yes, I was, and it is still the opinion of the House Democrats and myself that voting on this bill straight up is the best solution.
Even faced with the possibility of a referendum that would delay it for some period of time?
It may have been a better solution at one point to refer it to a November election, but that option is not available any longer. And with the options that we do have available before us at this moment, it is my opinion and the opinion of the rest of my caucus that we vote on this straight up.
Thank you,
Representative.
Again, I guess I see this, Mr. Chair, as a choice between a February election, or perhaps I'll engage you with this too, a December election. Why do you prefer the February election? Unless you're going to say here today that this will not be referred, and that you believe that this would not be referred by the vote to the voters.
Chair, Representative Shetterly, I realize that this is a difficult decision. I don't think that either one of those options is a December or a February alternative is necessarily exponentially better than the other. However, there are two things. I think while I cannot sit here before you and say that it will not be referred, I think that the people elected us to do a job, and I am ready to take the chances because it's not 100% chance that it's going to be referred. The other point to make is I think December is not. You might want to talk with political experts, but I think that December is probably not a great month to have an election. February 11th sounds like a fine date to me.
Representative Devlin. Mr. Chairman, unless the committee staff can correct me, Representative Kapori, the only thing that 4078 actually, I believe, lacks is a backup date. It has everything else in it. It simply does not have a backup date if by referendum it is referred to the people. So that is the only thing that's not in the bill.
Thank you, Representative Devlin. Chair, we have had drafted amendments to House Bill 4075, which would address those concerns.
For the elections bill?
Correct.
Representative Hayes.
You took care of my question already. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and even if those, we don't have the hard words in front of us, I think that's something we conceptually put in to get it out, to get it moving. And that's, I'm not trying to deny process or ideas. You know, I'm trying to move the ball forward. I see that as something we can conceptually put in.
I appreciate that, and I think that in an effort to move the process forward, I would urge you to vote out House Bill 4078 as it was introduced.
Mr. Chair, if I just respond to one other thing, and I have already in this committee on the question of straight-up versus referral, is somehow doing our job or not doing our job. I don't see it as being a choice of doing our job or not doing our job. It's a tactical decision, as far as I see it, being a question of, since this is going to the voters anyway, I mean, that is a reality. Since this is going to voters anyway, to me it's a question of timing. And to me it is far better to put the question to the voters in a timely way so that the question can be answered before we incur the cost of mailing out tax forms and tax instructions and before you have a filing season underway, 6 weeks underway, five at least, before we even get to this question at the earliest date. So I guess I would just disagree for the record that it's a question, because I read this in the paper and I hear in the news. It's not a question of whether we're doing our job or not. We're after, I think, the same objective here, you and me. It's a question of tactical approach and which one is going to get you the soonest answer. Granted, December is an awful time, but I'll bet that February 11 is no dynamite time to ask for a tax vote as well. I think that's just a tough one. You have to pick either way you go. I think there is no good day to put out a single-issue special election, shall we increase your income taxes by $407 million? Sort of a pick your poison. And I'd rather have that question answered before December so we can get it off the decks going into the next session and not have that hanging over us for the first month of the session. That's just my point.
Chair, Representative Shirley, I appreciate your comments, and I realize that this may... that we both have the same goal in sight, and I think that goal is to actually produce a measure that if we're going to vote on it and it's going to pass this body, that it actually is passed by the people, and the money that's raised from such a measure goes to all the important programs that we care about, like schools and public safety and human services. And I just want to assure you that I did not come to this decision, nor did my caucus lightly. We've thought long and hard about it, and I believe bottom line, that this measure has a better chance of passing if we pass it straight up first, and if it is referred, then it goes to a February ballot. I think that gives us the optimum chance of passing this by the people, and I realize we may have disagreements on that, but that's what I'm here to testify. Also, Mr. Chair, I do want to clarify one thing that you said earlier. We were told that the committee process would be working to the effect that we would be allowed to have our amendments drafted in a hard copy, and then the bills would be voted on with hard copy amendments. So my understanding is that process is going to be changed.
Well, that process is not going to be changed, but the chair is not going to wait to the exclusion of being able to meaningfully consider either one of these bills on the floor. You've got your amendments here. Let's go. I think I already indicated to you I would be more than happy to conceptually amend this bill to accommodate the date certain referral.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to reiterate that we have the date certain language in House Bill 4075 as an amendment to House Bill 4075. If it's your pleasure, I would like to quickly run through each of the other bills that you're going to be hearing in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, before we leave this bill, may I ask a question of the administrator?
Of course.
I've heard the term $483 million of tax increase to the voters. I'd like to ask Mr. Warner, what is the magnitude of the tax increase that will go to the voters?
Mr. Chair, I believe Representative Hayes is asking about the over the both biennium and the two biennium period of 3 years. As you recall from the LC-17 impact was $395 million in 2003 and $497 million in 2005. This measure has the corporate 5% surtax, which would add, we estimate, the $12 million in the current biennium to be $407 million. And roughly $30 million in the 2003-2005 biennium would be $527 million. So the sum of those two is $934 over the two biennial periods.
And that, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Warner, that is the measure that will be placed on the ballot for the voters by referral or referendum, if those occur.
Unless you change the numbers.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Go ahead. Okay.
Mr. Chair, for purposes of clearness, if this bill goes to the floor for a vote right now or soon, we don't need a conceptual change as far as time certain, because that's in 4075. And we're not changing 3-2. We're not making it revenue neutral. It's going out the way it's written here. Am I correct in that assumption?
But we don't know. We haven't voted on it.
Okay.
I believe this produces the 407.
Yep.
And I think the debate comes down to, are we going to make it 397 or
395 or 407?
I mean, okay. You know, taking an hour to fix that is not worth the $12 million.
Pretty good. I'll take $12 million an hour. But I'm not sitting here.
I'm not here.
You know, you guys laugh. I'm not patient.
I'm sure we can do this successfully. That's
right.
Yeah.
I hope you hear my urgency. Please proceed.
Thank you. I wanted to comment again on one thing I said earlier, that the reason I'm testifying on these bills at one time before you is because, in my mind, they are part of a package, and they all go together. House Bill 4073, the Master Settlement Bill, although I believe that borrowing our way out of debt is not the most fiscally prudent solution, as part of a compromise, myself and House Democrats are willing to sign up for $100 million in borrowing. House Bill 4075, the ballot title bill. Again, I want to go on record. I suggest that we consider amending this bill, and we are having amendments drafted to strengthen the ballot title language and explanatory statement, set up a special election in February, and specify that if there is a referendum on House Bill 4078, that it would be referred to that election. House Bill 4076 is the referral bill, and I oppose sending any measure to the November ballot at this late date. We've already missed the voter's pamphlet and overseas ballots, and think that 4078 is a better option, which you have in front of you. Lastly, House Bill 5100, the disappropriation bill. Because I am and my caucus support a straight-up vote on the revenue measure, it is not necessary to have a cut level above $50 million. In addition, I strongly urge the committee to restore the $50 million that was lost to K-12 due to the veto of House Bill 4056.
I appreciate those comments, Deborah, and unless you think that you were the only one willing to compromise. I mean, we have agreed to put K-12 back in the mix completely across the board to this week. The chair's willingness to put the $50 million back lost out of special session 4 back in, you know, attached to the tax. If the straight up prevails, that's obviously done immediately. The issue here is, and one of my reasons for urgency, is the disappropriation bill really can't be done until we decide, is this straight up or is this referral? Because as Deborah has articulated, there's no need to do the across-the-board disappropriation if it's straight up. So this is a critical decision. It's across the roads, as as to where, you know, this special session is going, and we have hours to do it.
Mr. Chair. Your comments on the cut bill aside, it sounds to me like what this really boils down to, as I take the notes here, is a disagreement between $100 million and $200 million in bonding. At about 4%. And question whether the tax measure comes up for a vote in December or February. It's unfathomable to me that those seem to be the two push points that we have not been able to bring this thing to closure.
Yeah, and we're close.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair and committee, I realize this is a very difficult decision. We ran out of the easy choices a long time ago, I think probably even before special session one began. And I very much appreciate you allowing me this opportunity. Thank you.
Remember the salad days when we were only $700 million down? Like a beach in Hawaii. Thank you. I know that the governor is joining us, and we are honored by your presence, sir. Would you like to come forward?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Judge Gipsauber, Governor of the State of Oregon. I appreciate very much the opportunity to provide some testimony on the difficult deliberations that you're having to resolve the state budget challenge. With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make some, I guess, general conceptual comments on the elements, as I understand the bills haven't actually been completed yet. There are three parts to this approach. There's the borrowing element that uses the national tobacco settlement. There's a disappropriation element, and then there's a tax element. And let me start with the master settlement agreement. As you know, I have some real concerns about additional borrowing against the future. This is essentially a plan to borrow $250 million against future revenue stream that will pay back over a 5 or 6 year period, reducing resources available to future budgets and future legislators. I'm troubled particularly by the fact that we already have in excess of $800 million in one-time revenue in this budget, and it's pushed a large portion of this problem already into the future. I do believe that Oregonians would prefer that we pay as you go. I think people, if you look at surveys that have been out there, many people don't want their taxes raised. They want to cut the budget, but a larger number don't want to borrow. And I think that this runs counter to that. Having said that, you know, I'm certainly not going to get in the way of this. This is what the leadership believes is the appropriate way to deal with this last piece of our revenue situation. But I just want to go on the record as opposing this as a solution to our budget problems. As I understand it, there are two different tax proposals. Structurally, they differ in the inclusion or exclusion of the corporate income tax. Both would raise the personal income tax, and the leadership proposal would also have the personal income tax piece referred to the voters. I'd like to offer a strong endorsement of the straight-up enactment of the revenue needed to balance the budget as presented by Representative Kapori. As she indicated, for whatever reason, we have run past the deadlines for the normal statutory referral to the November ballot by the legislature. We would be without a voter's pamphlet statement, and without that widely used source of objective information, I think we would doom a referral at this point, the November ballot at least, to failure. I am not convinced that if we enacted this straight up, that it would be referred. I mean, I take exceptions with that. There were many people here who believed that the deferral of Measure 88 would be referred, and in fact it wasn't. This is the action that was taken 20 years ago by the legislature. It was not referred, and there was no political consequence to anybody who supported that surcharge in 1982. I am particularly concerned about the drumbeat that the Radioheads are out there lining up volunteers to collect signatures. I say let them do it. That's a legitimate part of the process. But to collect signatures against this revenue increase, they would be collecting signatures toward the kind of cuts that were delineated by the agency heads this morning. And I guess I have a real concern that we surrender Oregon's future to the radio talk show hosts without ever walking onto the field of battle. I think we should take them on. And I would hate to reach a point where fear of what they might do influences decisions that we make in the legislative branch or in the executive branch. I guess I would say in closing, I think it's very, very important for us to think carefully about the default choices that remain to us if we don't simply enact this revenue component. I think they become worse, not better, from a policy standpoint and from a political standpoint. You could dramatically increase the borrowing. You could securitize $400 million. I won't veto it. But that's a difficult choice and a difficult decision. The only other alternative would be to refer a measure to the ballot and pass a disappropriation bill in excess of $200 million. And you have to vote, find the votes for $200 million in cuts. And if you chose to refer the measure without a disappropriation bill, then the vote's a sham because you'd be dangling a tax increase out here without any consideration of what those resources would be used for. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think there is an opportunity here to resolve the state's budget crisis, to take definitive action and do it in a way that provides the maximum security available for the future of the state of Oregon. We have a balanced budget. If, in fact, it was referred and ultimately defeated, then whether it's in December or whether it's February, the next legislature would have a larger, not smaller problem, but they would have all the options available to them to prioritize those cuts in a way that would minimize the impact on programs and services in the state. I appreciate the opportunity to appear and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Governor. I just want to say and respectfully disagree on the bonding piece. Oregon, over the last 10, 12 years, has actually done an exceptionally good job of managing our bonded indebtedness, where today we currently enjoy one of the lowest per capita levels of indebtedness in the nation. I think that is in large part why we still enjoy, albeit we have received the letter of warning, why we still enjoy the same credit rating that we did coming in into this recession. You look at the magnitude of the problem, not just this $500 million that we're all arm wrestling on, but the consequences for next biennium. And that is where the real solution is next biennium. I do not believe that the bonding component is a one-leg stool, you know, one-leg stool answer. But it is certainly part of it. And whether, you know, it's $100 million or, I would agree, hopefully not $400 million, but whatever that number is, and whatever the cut portion is, and most of the members of this committee sat on a little ad hoc group to go through and really come up with about $50 million worth of reductions, and we knew we shed blood over that. You know how difficult that is. But cuts are part of the solution. You know, the revenue component is part of the solution. But regardless of what the package we craft now, and this is what I urge you and the committee and all the members, you know, in the room, advocates, to consider, is that whatever we do now, we are not solving the problem for next biennium. We can make it a little better or a little worse. And what I am mostly concerned about is solving what I feel we came here for, which is to solve the budget shortfall, not Oregon's revenue problem. It's a difficult, challenging, complex decision. I know you know that.
But, Chair, I would simply, I guess, point out that we're not going to solve the long-term structural challenges facing Oregon's tax code. I mean, I appreciate that. That's a challenge for the next session. But I think it's that we can significantly increase the likelihood of success for the next legislative session if we don't plunge them into the same kind of budget crisis that we're struggling to get out of. And if, in fact, the proposal that was advanced by Representative Forey were to be enacted for 3 years, along with the roll-up of the tobacco tax and whatever cuts, you can reduce the deficit in the next biennium down under $500 million, which is very manageable. And it's a big difference between that and $1 billion in terms of, as we all know, taking, echoing your comments at the good old days when we only had a $700 million problem.
It was some of the most enjoyable moments I had ever spent in this project.
Says a lot.
Mr. Sheridan, I spent with Steve Marks over long, lingering dinners where they literally would kick us out of the restaurant because we were closing it down at 11 o'clock, and then we'd go out in the parking lot and talk for another hour.
And you didn't solve the problem? Okay.
Well, at the time, we were at
Waterheads
because the tax proposal at the time was considerably greater than we are considering here today. And my big concern was, right, you're putting way too much money in the next biennium. This is probably a manageable number next biennium that doesn't take too much pressure out of the balloon, although I think it takes some, and I worry about that. I mean, it's a ratio. Anyway, we appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Governor, good to see you. This afternoon, I guess I would like to comment, too, on the borrowing. You made some general comments about borrowing. I think generally, I do agree with you in terms of borrowing as a matter of fiscal policy. It's not your number one choice, but I think we are way beyond our top tier of choices. And I guess I would just suggest that the cost of borrowing as a component, anyway, of a balanced solution at somewhere 4% or less than 4% on the money is a bargain when you look at the cost of restoring the kind of cuts in programs that we would be facing. And you talked about this morning, hey, I'll take 4% anytime to avoid the immediate impact of those cuts and the costs over long haul of having to restore those services and programs. So granted, borrowing is not a top-tier choice, but it's way above the level of cuts we're talking about, and I'll take borrowing anytime. The other comment I guess I would make on the straight up or the referral, and I think it is, I'll say the same thing as I said to Representative Tafori, I think this is a difference in tactics and not a difference in terms of where we would like to see voters go on this. You mentioned that we should not let the fear of what the opposition, the talk show hosts might do, dictate our strategy, but I think that in military conflict as well as politics and everything else, I think you do take into account your opposition strategy and strengths and the potential that they have to affect your course of action. On the battlefield, I want a general there that knows what the enemy's strength is and isn't going to just charge into be another picket charge just because, damn it, I'm right. I want to know what's on the other side of the field there and who's in wait for me, and then I'm going to make my strategy accordingly. And my gut and my email and my mail and my telephone and my visits to the store and everywhere else I go tell me that they're not going to have any problem getting 44,000 signatures, and they'll probably do it in a few days' time. I mean, they're just waiting. They're begging us to give them that opportunity. So for me, it's a matter not of reacting in fear, but reacting tactically to what I anticipate the strong and heartfelt opponents of this are going to do. And I would also say in closing that the strategy that I'm hearing develop now, which is just voted straight up and devil come what may, Governor, in all respect, that begins to sound like a strategy that, in looking back the past few months, has caused the defeat of Measure 13, and that we wish we had $220 million right now for schools, and also the veto and the failure to override the earlier bonding, and don't we wish we had that $125 million right now. I see this as being a strategy that is so fraught with peril for programs and schools and things that we care about, and I'm just not willing to do it.
Well, Mr. Chair, Vernon Fairway, you certainly have the final say, because I don't have a vote on this deal, but I don't see why we make it. If we believe that we need the revenue, if we don't believe these cuts are good for the state of Oregon, then we have a fundamental disagreement with those who don't want to raise the tax. And why should we give them the election? Why not make them earn it? Why not have an opportunity when they're gathering signatures to talk about the consequences of this to Oregon, to cast it against the cuts, instead of simply surrendering the high ground to them? If I was a general, I'd make my enemy earn the high ground. I wouldn't put him on top and then try to climb the hill after him.
I'm not a military guy either. I choose the battlefield.
Well, we're going to get that, I think, one way or another.
Representative Zibel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor,
we agree on about 90% of items. And we probably even agree on this item. You know, sometimes when we talk about borrowing for present needs, it's put in a very bad light because people say that we should be paying as you go, and I agree with that sentiment. But if we were talking about borrowing for some capital improvements that would be a long-term benefit, most people accept that as reasonable. And the analogy that I make on the doorstep when people ask me about this, and most people, I think that this is a good analogy. I mean, there are some public services where we would be talking one time, not all, obviously. But I look at, if I have to borrow to give kids a good education rather than a substandard education, that education is an investment in the future. And I don't want to go 2 or 3 years or 2 years giving them a substandard education because I would prefer not to borrow, you know. But if I have to make that investment now, and if I have to borrow to do it, I'm willing to do it because the potential losses in the future are too great if we give kids substandard education for a couple of years in this state. And I just wanted your reaction to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I guess just a couple of thoughts. I think borrowing is certainly a legitimate tool. I guess my concern about the level of borrowing is really in the context of the shift of all the muffle money, of all the national tobacco settlements, of all the other one-time things we've done, because I think we're putting in jeopardy the educational opportunities for kids tomorrow. We hold them firm today, but it's a 12-year operation to get a kid out of high school, and then there's the whole issue of college. But given the budget circumstances, I have said on record, we'll say it again, I will certainly support the bonding element. I was willing to support up to $200 million in additional borrowing, securitization, or whatever you choose to do, as long as the net result of the pieces of the package dramatically reduces the liability in 0305. If we borrow additional resources and don't improve our fiscal picture in 0305, I don't think we've really accomplished anything. But as part of a balanced package, I will endorse it and work for it, just as I stood with Representative Shetterly and endorsed the ballot measure for the Education Balance Fund in the context of the larger effort that we're engaged in here today.
Representative Shetterly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Governor, I guess I would ask, given the choice before us of a, let's say, December election or a February election, how would that affect the cuts that you would implement in the event of the failure of either one of those election dates?
Well, I think the longer you put the election off, I think the more compelling becomes the argument for making some cuts, because obviously the depth of the cuts magnifies dramatically if you try to concentrate them into 3 months of the buying versus 7 or 8 months. So I think that has to at least be considered. I guess to me the bottom line question, if we're talking about a referral date, whether it's a referral by the legislature or a default referral if opponents gather the signatures, is the implications on the budget and the likelihood of success as a whole. So I don't have a strong feeling one way or another.
Any other questions? Representative Bates.
Governor, thank you for coming. Nice to see you again. I want to thank you as an outgoing governor for taking this battle on. You could have just ridden off the sunset, I think, and not taken this battle. I appreciate you doing so ongoing. I really mean that. I want to go back to what Representative Devlin was talking about for a few moments. As I have read, and Fonse, you have, in the next 10 years, we never expect to have the kind of economy we've had in the past in this state. And even with recovery, we don't expect to have, in addition to that, even with a change in tax structure, we don't expect to have the kind of revenues we've had in the past. Thinking of that, we're looking for a magic number for what that bonding should look like, what that borrowing should look like. And I would like to have your reflections with your past experience in this building and your reflections on what you think the future holds for the state. And where do you think that number really should be? We suggest $100 million. Others have suggested $250 million. I am concerned that not just in 0305, but in the future years past that, we'll still be tied to paying off those bonds at a time when our revenue stream is not going to be that significantly different now than it is now, or only up a slight amount in comparison to what we had in the 90s.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I guess two thoughts. One, obviously, it would be more fiscally prudent to pay it off over a shorter rather than a longer period of time, and that is related to the magnitude of the size of what you're going to borrow. In terms of the magic number, I don't think there is a magic number. I think the number is driven by the permanent cuts and by the permanent revenue, because those are the two things that resolve your problems. So if you want deeper cuts or more revenue, then I think you can have a higher bonding level or a borrowing level and still have the same outcome. And I feel very, very strongly that if, in fact, we're committed to trying to make the next legislature successful in resolving the structural tax challenges facing the state of Oregon, we've got to create an environment where they're not consumed once again by a budget crisis. And, you know, I would say that you need to get that number down $700 or $800 million in order to have an atmosphere where the next governor puts in a budget that allows you the breathing space, if you will, to not only rebalance, but to figure out how you make the structural changes to stabilize our tax system. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Governor?
Thank you.
I don't know if we have a sign-up sheet. We are in a public hearing for House Bill 4078. Representative?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment, a dash 8 amendment to House Bill 4076. Actually, I would like to have it supplied to 4078, however, but by the time I had requested them, there was some delay in getting the initial bill prepared. So I'll tell you what it says, and then I only have a couple copies here, but I'll tell you what it says, and then we can get copies. Specifically, House Bill 4078 is the bill I believe that Representative Kifori testified to. It's a tax increase bill that calls for a straight up or down vote. I think it raises about $409 million this biennium, something above that in the next biennium. This amendment would leave the 5% bracket at 5%. It would leave the 7% bracket at 7%. It would take the 9% bracket and increase it to 9.5% for 3 years. It would bring in approximately $303 million this biennium. I believe it's about, I know Paul has the number. I think it's something above that for the next biennium. I just heard the governor speak and say that he would accept up to $200 million in bonding, the one-time dollars. We have a problem of roughly,
yes.
He
said $400 million.
He said $400 million.
In bonding?
Yeah.
I thought he said $200 million. We have a problem here, as we know, of 500 or possibly 550 if we go back in terms of the 50 million cuts to K-12. It goes back to the fourth special session. My concern is bringing out a $409 million tax increase is bringing out a bill that doesn't have a chance of succeeding. And my understanding is we're looking at putting both these bills out on the floor. We're putting one out that many members who are willing to support a tax increase are very uncomfortable in terms of going far higher than we have to go. So this bill would protect the 5 and the 7% brackets at their current rates so that lower income, which as a percentage of their income will be disproportionately lower income people, will not be influenced. It would take the 9, it would increase it to 9.5. It would do that for 3 years. It would bring in $303 million in this biennium, which together with a couple hundred million dollars in bonding and some cuts, more than adequately handles the problem. So, you know, I've heard all the discussion here about a straight-up vote versus a referral. I prefer to see the straight-up vote. I understand the tactical considerations that Representative Shetterly specifically was talking about. Generally, I agree with the governor on that, though, and I think you take the battle to them. I think if we believe the revenue is needed, I think that's the first question. If we believe the revenue is needed as part of a comprehensive plan here to deal with the shortfall, then I think we should be willing to vote for it. Now, if it does get referred, and there's a reasonable chance that it does, then I think the burden becomes on those opponents to overturn what the legislature did. I think that's a better tactical position than the position simply punting it to the voters. If we believe the revenue is needed. So I prefer a straight-up vote, and if we're going to run out of bill with a straight-up vote, let's have a real number in it relative to a tax increase that has a reasonable chance of passing. Let's not have a number that's so high that there's no chance it'll pass. I think it kind of begs the whole argument and frankly, I think takes away an opportunity to pass a tax increase on the floor that is a level that is reasonable and is needed and that more members can support. Finally, I would leave one last thought, Mr. Chairman, and that is that I think it's important that we come to some bipartisan solution to this problem. And if we're running out of bill, that I understand it's the Democrats that have asked for the bill for the $409 million, I don't think there's any Republican buy-in. On the other hand, if we're doing it simply because we know the bill's going to fail, which sets us up for the referral, I think there's a lack of bipartisanship to the process that ultimately doesn't serve the state well. So based upon that, I would urge adoption of the Dash 8 amendments to the House Bill 4078. And again, this, what it specifically does is it's a straight-up vote bill, and it keeps the 5 and the 7% brackets where they are for the next 3 years, takes the 9 and increases it to 9.5. It brings in $303 million, and I think Paul can tell you what it brings in the next plan, and I think it's like $376 million. So with that, if there's any questions, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to address them.
No, hold on. Let's have Paul. Do you have those numbers?
Mr. Chair, I do. I don't think I do.
Mr. Chairman, I... Yeah, could we? Mr. Chairman, I think I have them in something that was handed out in caucus a couple days ago. And again, this is based upon simply setting a new rate of 9.5 for 3 years, $303 million this biennium, and in the 03-05 biennium, $382 million. Which would take you through the 04 tax year. So 303, this finding 382, next finding. Again, Mr. Chairman, I think that together with a responsible level of bonding and some targeted cuts addresses the problem. And I think it does it in a way that we have a shot at getting it passed on the floor, but I think it also gives us a much more bipartisan approach to the problem.
Any questions for Representative Britt? When you get copies, Bill, make sure we get them, because what the chair's intention is to craft in both of these bills as similar a package as we can, or as much similarity as we can. In fact, I think the only difference should be subject to straight up or withdrawal at the end of the day. So when you get copies passing around,
I think staff's making copies now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions for Representative Britt?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on come ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Rick Vester, State Senator, District 26, and I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman. I know in these special sessions sometimes we have a difficult time getting the train rolling, and once the train does start rolling, no one is inclined to want to stop it. So I was very interested in listening to Representative Witt, because I do want to express a concern, and since you have expressed an indication that you may take conceptual amendments, would fit in that category. Regarding House Bill 4078 and the income scale, I think it would be advisable. And if we are looking at the success in this building as well as with the electorate, as Mr. Witt has I pointed out, is to take a look at where those additional revenues would be imposed upon. And I, as written, and I respect the way and the efforts that have gone into the specific bill and the very specificity of it, but as written, the bill does impose a rather significant tax hardship on people who are at federal poverty level. I personally find that unacceptable. I'm not speaking for a caucus or anywhere else, but I will tell you there's a few others that have that same concern. I didn't know what Representative Witt was going to present, but he presented a very considerate a view and very consistent with the message that I would like to bring to this committee today. And that is, if this is to be sent out, it's to consider, my suggestion and the revenue figure, and I can get those for you, Mr. Chair, is only very slightly less than the one that Representative Witt just pointed out. Would be to impose the 9.6 only on incomes that were 20,000 and above, so that those who meet federal poverty guidelines are not hit with a tax increase, It's almost like we've been cutting services for these folks, and now we're going to restore them to you by charging you for them with the tax increase. So it's actually a very similar message to what Representative Witt has just told you, but I think that would be a very, very important message if we're going to move this through the process, is to avoid those who are in federal poverty before we ask them to increase their tax.
So if we draft something that avoids the federal poverty level issue that you're so concerned about, and I think Representative Witt look out eloquently to the and it gets the Senate side, you'll vote for it.
So I'm telling you, we'll see how you link all these things together, Mr. Chairman. But I think in terms of as a standalone vehicle, you know, that is going to be important not only for myself but a number of members in my caucus to find support.
Well, I mean, I love your passion, but if it's going to get there, I mean, never mind. Any questions for the good senator? Representative Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's been a discussion also about making that floor at 50,000 instead of 20,000, and trying to get the upper brackets a little harder as far as equity is concerned. I would move that upper bracket to 9.79 or 75 in order to make this neutral. What's your reaction to moving it to 50,000 instead of 20,000?
Well, I don't know, Representative Bates, I give you any, you know, specifics on that. I mean, I think you're hitting the same concept, and I certainly, on a personal level, wouldn't split hairs on that. It's the concept that we make sure that those people who have been affected by the recession most are not the ones that are asked to carry that burden. And certainly wouldn't split hairs on that. I mean, that could be another approach. Even Representative Wood's proposal could be that approach. I mean, it's 90% of the message that I'm conveying to you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have any short testimony they want to give to House Bill 4078?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob Kantheimer of the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'll be very brief. We came into this session as counties hoping for balance, both in terms of the package and the approach, that we weren't looking at all cuts or just taxes, but something that was balanced, and I'm very pleased at what's been done here, that we're here today talking about that instead of talking about all cuts or some other single option. And county officials have gone through similar processes like this at the local level, and they try to find balance too, and I think that's what you've done, and I thank you for that. And thank you for the way in which you chaired this committee in a very difficult circumstance to allow us to participate. And I thank you for that. We have a second question about balance, and that was that the manner in which the package is shaped doesn't do something disproportionate to parts of the system. As we looked at, tried to take the proposal for bonding and taxes and run them against that screen, we sat there looking at a situation with the bonding and the referral that had a disproportionate impact, a potential impact on the public safety, the human services, and the other non-education services. And we clearly were very strongly supportive of education. It's got to be the lead, but we also were hoping for a way that you could approach it that would have more balance in it than to put one out and if the election fails and all the cuts fall on that area. At least that is our understanding, if I understand the big picture problem. So it was conclusion of the association that we would support a direct vote by the legislature and urge your consideration of that approach, not only for that reason, but also for the reason that we anticipate a pretty complicated ballot with lots of local measures, with the state measure on your health care, and feel that if we're going to have an election, there it ought to be one maybe where it's focused solely on this important issue. And if we have a referral, if we have a direct action and then a referral, you could specify that date. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions for Bob representing the county today? Thank you, Bob.
Anyone else? 4078, public hearing? Not, we will close the hearing on House Bill 40, the public hearing on House Bill 4078. And open work session, House Bill 4078. Quick recap from staff again.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 4078 creates instead of 7%, a 7.3%, instead of 9%, 9.6%. It does contain some language in there that adjusts for any possible penalties that would be associated with the new higher rates and waives those penalties. It establishes a 5% surtax on corporate income, and it also sunsets after a three-year period. The issues that were raised when you first began looking at the bill was the 2 or 3 year issue. The rate on the bottom group of the 7%, you had a 7.2% amendment drafted for House Bill 4076. You also had a proposal from Representative Witt to keep that at 7% versus the 7.3% that are currently in it. And finally, we did draft different language for House Bill 4076 on the corporate income tax and drafting it as a temporary rate increase rather than a spur tax.
Two questions for staff?
The Chair, let me explain something procedurally. I would like us to think that as we are discussing this bill, we are also discussing 4076, and that when we get through our navigations on 4078, we are ready to go on the referral. I think in fairness and equity that these bills should be the same, whatever that may be. I mean, there may be some small accommodations in one versus the other to accommodate the specific nature of the structure. But other than that, I think the rates, the concept, the length of time, or it should be the same. Any questions on that? Anybody disagree with that? No? Okay. I think Representative Witt introduced some compelling testimony. And why are we taxing more, so much more than we need? Does anyone have any thoughts or feelings on that?
Because it's there?
Well, it might be a great philosophy for climbing the mountain, Representative, but I don't see. You know, I don't see that as, you know, balancing budgets. While we may be climbing mountains here, hopefully we're not choking the windmill. Representative.
Mr. Chairman, there's nothing new under the sun, and there's some wisdom in the psalmist that says, take no thought for tomorrow. Sufficient for the day is the evil thereof. Mr. Chairman, I think we have arrived at a sufficiently evil day, and we should deal with the problem that is before us. And the problem that is before us, Mr. Chairman, is a $483 million deficit over the next 10 months. We are addressing that problem by proposing a three-year solution totaling $1.14 billion. I think that we should make our reach and our grasp the same and address the problem at hand and not predetermine the actions of the next legislative session. We may think that we're doing them a favor by forwarding $1.14 billion to them, but in fact, we don't know what tomorrow will bring, and this may not be the solution for which they will search. So I would suggest that we limit our remedies to the problem at hand.
That is just my sound. I think it's a great day. We will get up, within the public process, and we've got a heck of a challenge in front of us, and it is not an easy day. I woke up in good health, and hopefully I'll be able to put my head on the pillow tonight in good health. And guarantee it. If that can get there, maybe we'll call it. But, what do you think?
You tell me if this is yours. I think my preference would be to get my two members back here before we take any action, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we'll take a lightning recess. We're in a work session on House Bill 4078. The measure before us is the fondly known, or not so fondly known, as the straight-up tax bill. Representative Bates, what are your comments, sir?
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, our caucus cannot take a vote on this. We've held House Bill 4075. We have to know we have a date certain for this if it becomes a referral.
You're going to get a date certain.
We need to get that before we can do 4078. We don't want this going out in November, October. We want this going out in February of next year. And it's a technical thing. It's very important to us. We need a date certain on that. I was just going to say 4075. We also wanted to just have someone from the St. General's office come up and discuss from the elections office concerning the December February issue of whether we can do it in December.
That's fine. In the meantime, let's take up. We will close the work session.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Can staff provide any expertise on can that amendment be made in a conceptual manner to exercise for this project? The amendment on
yeah, that? Yeah, we have to gain 775, which is exactly what I was doing.
Okay, all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a physical amendment?
We are trying to get it drafted right as we speak.
We are conceptually. We will close the work session on House Bill 4078. We will open a public hearing on 4075. Anyone with any testifies, seeing none, so orders. We will open a work session on House Bill 4075.
Mr. Chair, we would like to ask Mr. Neely to come up from elections immediately if he's listening and discuss the December-February issue. And after his testimony, make a decision, which I think will probably be February 11th, for a date specific for a date that we'd use if we were facing a referral from the people on this bill after voting straight up. Is there any chance you can get here quickly? No. We're on 4075. Can I move to 4075? Try to move this process along.
Let us proceed with the discussion. What I'm hearing is dysfunctionally. Did you guys have a preference?
Our preference is probably February. Representative Shirley gave up a good point that there is a possibility legally for December, but we've heard that the election department says we can't get out that fast after the November election. We just can't do it. And we still think February is the best date to do it in. Like the date we spoke of was February 11th, I believe, is probably the correct date. And that's where we'd like to go. And I would be willing to say we can conceptually amend the bill now, knowing that's what we're going to do. However, it might be worthwhile to get a few minutes to hear from them in case I'm in error about this. Okay. And they may not be able to get here. And we want to move it along.
If someone calls, make sure you take off. If someone from the Hudson's up here, right away.
It's been sent for.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I would take a recess, except my Democratic friends keep wandering off. The question, we'll get our usually addressed LFO staff, who is Bennington, in conversations with elections to give as much as information as she possibly can.
Hi, Avery. You didn't run.
We're talking about putting a date certain referral into the state of elections bill should it be petitioned to referred, to be referred, and so we are concerned that the is there a better date? Or is there problems if you get into the new tax year, i.e. February? We're under advice from counsel Greg Chamoff that should there be a specific straight-up vote, and it was petitioned to be referred successfully, that the soonest we could get to it would be February 11th. So concerns about what happens if there is an election in 11 or February 11th, or is that not true? Is there a different perspective on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, it's my understanding that Legislative Counsel Ted Reitlinger, who can answer your procedural legal kinds of questions more directly than I can.
Get Reitlinger up here.
He's coming. I can respond to questions about costs. If there were to be a change for Berlin, and I see Fred Neal.
Fred, enter. Sign in, please. So if you want the real Fred Neal. Pink shirt thing, I understand, but where's the bow tie? See, this is a reasonable
vaccine. Yes.
Representative Bates, go ahead.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I do appreciate you working with us on this. Now, the question has arisen within our caucus of if you have a straight-up vote on this particular measure that we would like, if we are challenged in a referendum, when is the date that could be set? We have heard that December is a very difficult time to get this done by the elections office, and we prefer February 11th. But there's also been suggestion because of the difficulty of sending out tax statements that prior to January 1st might be a valuable offer. We prefer, frankly, February 11th, but I want a quick hearing on your position on this.
I'm John Lindbeck, I'm Director of the Elections Division of the Secretary of State's Office. I want to make sure I understand your question correctly. Are you talking about a referendum on a referral or the referral itself?
Talking about a referendum. If it could be a straight-up vote, but if the public brings up a referendum on it, we want to know that we can set a date specific when that referendum would take place. And the debate is December versus February. We've been told February 11th is probably the earliest we can do.
Yes, February 11th at this date is the earliest that a referendum vote could take place.
Thank you. That's about as straight an answer you can get.
We appreciate the direct answers because we're moving.
Thank you. Just for clarification, the issue wasn't December or February for a vote on a referendum. I think the February was fairly well understood as the earliest date that we would get on a referendum. The other is the maybe legal question we could ask to Ted Reitlinger, but the other is the other issues surrounding a December referral.
The issues surrounding December referral?
Yeah.
Well, they'd be logistical because obviously we're running a November 5th election. There's various deadlines associated with November 5th election, such as mailing out regular ballots has to go no later than October 18th. And if we have a December election in the mix, mailing out of military ballots has to occur no later than November 2nd. You'd have ballots coming into elections offices for the November 5th election and ballots going out of elections offices for the December 17th election. I'm sure most county clerks would tell you that that's a recipe for a logistical nightmare and possibly election errors, but in a legal sense, there isn't any legal impediment to setting a December election.
Any other questions, Representative?
That's what I understood.
Well, one of the reasons we're getting Ted up here, we've got a very direct, thank you, answer as to the early state. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the date was February 11th, for a revenue measure, is the effective date of the measure taking effect the date of the election or the date of the certification of the election?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, the answer to that question is the if it's referred by petition and the election is February 11th, if it passes, the effective date is 30 days after the date of the election, so when the results are actually formally certified. And that answer is true if the legislature refers the measure also.
Mr. Chairman, hold on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ruttlinger, if the effective date is 30 days after the February 11th date, there would be nothing, though, precluding a state agency based on that vote from starting the process of any amendments, the forms that they needed, et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, unless there was some statute that specifically prohibited them from taking a certain action, I suppose an agency could begin preparations if it was clear that the law was going to take effect. The legal question there would be whether or not they were doing something that they were otherwise prohibited by law from doing. So if that impediment wasn't there, then they could probably proceed with the understanding that the bill was going to become law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Shedderly.
Thank you. I see two stellar representatives of the Department of Revenue, including Deborah and Susan Browning. I haven't seen Susan in a couple of sessions. She used to staff the revenue.
Thank you for sharing. What's your point?
Well, I guess the question is if we have a December referral, whether the Department of Revenue would mail out tax forms and instructions based on the outcome of the December referral without waiting the 30 days for certification so they get rolling on the results. So I'd like to have that question answered by then when we're done with this panel.
Well, come on up. Let's get everyone. Someone move a chair up here and move two chairs up here. Marshall, you need to give up your chair. What a gentleman. Look at that guy go. You are the man. Make sure when you're speaking to lean into the mic because these are the old-fashioned mics. You got to be right on.
For the record, Mr. Chair, I'm Susan Browning. I'm the Department of Revenue. I'm an administrator of the Personal Tax and Compliance Division, which is the Personal Income Tax Program.
Representative Shedderly's question, is it repeated?
Susan, did you hear my question? If we assume a scenario, we contemplate a December 17 referral, and you have an election count, granted the certification may not be finished, that is, the 30 days until January, but would you nevertheless be in a position to be able to print and mail out your forms and instructions at the end of the month based on whatever that December 17 election result would be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shedley, we're right in the process right now of working on next tax year's booklet. We've talked about that, and I've confirmed with our director, Elizabeth Harshenko, so we can meet either a December or a February election date. Obviously, the sooner we know, the better. February is doable, but it wouldn't be free. It would be kind of tough for us to do that, but we could do that if that was what you prefer to do. But as far as the December one goes, that would be preferable to February. The sooner we know, obviously, the better, Representative Shedley.
But what if it was you didn't know? I mean, the election was February. Which way is it going to go? How do you accommodate the early filers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would go ahead with the current tax rate, and we could look at the options, including a proposed new rate on the basis of perhaps that's going to pass in February. We would need to talk about the logistics of that, which is less confusing for the taxpayers. But we would go forward with the current tax rate, which is law now, if the election wasn't in February. Then we'd be prepared to really quickly update taxpayers, get information on our Internet, let them know there's been a change. We would also probably encourage taxpayers, if they could, to wait until after the election actually is filed, so we would not have to have them deal with amended returns and processing of that information.
Ooh.
It would not be pretty, but we could certainly do it. We would be prepared to do it.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to debate how we got to the point that we're debating going into February instead of November for this thing. We're not going to talk about that. But I appreciate all of you coming at her so quickly and suddenly.
to come up and discuss this with us and to flush this out for us. I appreciate that a great deal. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, I would ask, though, and as the bottom line here, we need to move this forward, that House Bill 4075 be conceptually amended to reflect a February 11th date if a referendum comes forward to the people on 4078.
Is that a motion?
I have a motion, sir.
Representative Bates has moved that House Bill 4075 be conceptually amended to reflect a February 11th election date should a tax enactment by the legislature be successfully petitioned to be referred.
Thank you.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask this primary question.
Of course.
Would you discuss very briefly for me the cash flow problems you would anticipate by encouraging tax filers not to file in January for 6 weeks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, the large majority of the tax debt is actually paid for withholding. So the state has a use of the money already for the withholding system. What we'd be doing would be not issuing refunds as early, probably asking people to wait till February to find out before they filed. So we'd actually be holding up on the refund piece of it.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Any objections to amending? We're voting on the amendment. Any objections to the amendment as proposed by Representative Bates? Seeing none. Order.
Okay. We move that House Bill 4075, as amended, be put forth.
Let's slow down. Do we need anything else in this bill?
Mr. Chair, we've amended House Bill 40.
It doesn't apply to 478 only.
If we amended 4078, we have. We need to amend the explanatory statement, the summary. That all would have to be amended to correspond to whatever substantive changes we made in the underlying bill.
So the ballot title has to be changed.
Yeah.
But hold on. We have approved the amendment. I just want you to put it into the bill. I don't want you to move it to the House floor.
I would then ask Mr. Chair that we take the conceptual amendment and move it into the bill.
Representative Bates has moved the amendment we just passed into House Bill 4075. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I will now close the work session on House Bill 4075 and reopen the work session on House Bill 4078. Okay. How do you guys want to structure this thing? Would you love the way it is?
Yes. We like the way it is. Let's move it out the way it is.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I...
Not Mr. Chair, the issue of this one not being parallel in the corporate tax language.
Oh, yes, sir.
This one does not have a corporate tax.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? This has a corporate
cert tax. Mr. Chairman, I will move to conceptually amend 4078 to reflect the language relative to corporate excise tax that is in 4076, which moves it from being a surcharge to an actual rate change.
Representative Devlin has moved that House Bill 4078 be amended to reflect the corporate excise tax as reflected in House Bill 4076.
We have included on the part of staff that we may need to
do. So we have a motion in front of us.
Chairman. Yes, if the chairman will Black Fifth Amendment, my conceptual amendment. My amendment will be conceptually amend 4078 to reflect the language which is in the DASH policy 4076.
Any objection to suspending the rule to withdraw Representative Devlin's First Amendment? Seeing none.
Well, Mr. Chair, question. You've got specific line references in House Bill.
I'm going to make a motion off the floor.
Off the floor?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that a motion to withdraw his motion?
Yeah.
Oh.
Excuse me. No objections. Ordered. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I move to conceptually amend 4078. Mr. Chairman, I move to conceptually amend 4078 to include the DASH 5 amendment to 4076 and also within that conceptual amendment to make any clarifying amendments that the Legislative Council may need to do in their terms that make all of the sections, et cetera, look correctly.
Is the hand motion included with it? Representative Devlin has moved the DASH 5, the 4076 DASH 5 into 4078. Discussion. Mr. Warner.
Mr. Chair, the DASH 5 contained the language that I spoke of, but it also applies to a 2-year instead of a 3-year. So we need to the first 4 lines of that.
I like it.
The first four lines of the House Bill 4076 to make it clear that I'm interpreting Representative Devlin's amendment to not change the winner.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct for this amendment, and so it would probably, you said it would change the, we would not include the first 4 lines, we probably would not include 23, 24, correct, either, or one on the next page.
Okay, so the receipt would be under section 5, which applies to the 6.93 weight, and the statute would be the current 6.68. The other language in section 7 actually is already in 4078.
Representative Devlin has moved House Bill House Bill 4076-5 into House Bill 4078 with the exception of the first 4 lines as reflected on 4076-5.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, and probably with the exception, if I can get clarification, of lines 23, 24. That's my reason.
Which is redundant.
Which is redundant.
Representative Shirley?
No, I think that's right. And did you mention lines
1-2?
1-2 on the second page, not right, being included in the conceptual amendment?
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Any objection to Representative Devlin's motion? Seeing none, so ordered. What else do we want to do to the trade-off?
We got it all now, don't we?
Yes.
Finish. But have we missed anything?
Let's just go slow here. Me with the bull whip.
Yeah, I'm glad we did. Thank you, got everything.
So you have the referral date in 1 and not the other.
This is the straight up.
Right.
Straight up.
And the if petition to be referred is taken care of in 4075.
Right.
I think that's.
Mm-hmm. So. And we've got it all. I think we got it all done.
We're due to the back. Well, we know who isn't curly. I lead up. You know who Mo is here.
We've got to figure all that out.
Representative Devlin has moved House Bill 4078 as amended by the 4076-5 absent line 1, 2, 3, and 4, the redundancy on lines 23, 24, and accepting lines 1 and 2 on page 2 to to the floor of the House of Representatives with a two-pass recommendation.
I motion to insist for the amendment. Yes. We're conceptually amending the bill.
We've done that.
Okay.
It's in there.
Okay.
Who wants to move it?
I will move it.
Representative Bates has moved House Bill 4078 to the floor of the House of Representatives as amended by the House Bill 4076-5 amendments, accepting line 1 through 4 on page 1, taking out the redundancy of lines 23-24 on page 1, and lines 1 and 2 on page 2. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Federer.
Just to clarify, I don't know if it was in the motion, but follow the new language from the dash 5 actually being inserted in lieu of the language already in the bill, which needs to come out.
It's being inserted.
I don't know what the should be in addition to that.
Yeah, it's being inserted in lieu of
the section with the 6 and 7?
Yeah, section 6.
And 8? And 9?
It's 10.
Looks like 6, 7, 9,
6, 7, 8, 9, yes.
You're just right.
That's the corporate.
Any objections to withdrawing the motion? No, that would...
Mr. Chairman, because the parties here have it all on record, I would remake the original motion that I made to amend the bill, and I would add to that amendment the amendment suggested by Representative Sherry. The Speaker and I used to do this on the Rules Committee, and the line we always used to end it with is, you know what we mean?
We will have, I appreciate you making the concise approach to this, Representative Devlin, but I would ask Mr. Warner to move Representative Bates' motion.
I think the motion would be to amend in conceptually House Bill 4076-5, really lines 6 through 22, in lieu of section 6, 7, 8, and 9 of the bill. So those sections come out, and lines 6 through 22 of the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4076 go in their books.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make this really interesting for the people that are trying to keep a record of this. So I would withdraw my motion if Representative Federally wants that to be his motion.
That's fine. That's what I want.
Yes. We know what we mean.
You know, I feel pretty good after about 5 minutes ago.
Come on. Do it.
Any objections to withdrawing Representative Bates' motion? None. Ordered. Representative Shetterly.
Okay, I think the motion, and this is purely just for parliamentary.
This is to amend the bill.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This would be to conceptually amend in House Bill 4078, the 4076-5 amendments, but only lines 6 through 22 of those amendments. And place them in House Bill 4078 in lieu of Section 6, 7, 8, fall would be 9 and 10, because 9 speaks to the third tax as well.
Yes, 9 would come out as well.
Uh-huh.
And 10 would stay, and it refers to the date, and that would be...
Okay.
Well, but that also has a two-year time period on it.
Mr. Chair.
No, it doesn't. I'm sorry. Section 10
is right. Okay. So in lieu of Section 6, 7, 8, and 9, which would come out of the bill to be replaced by the language in lines 6 through 22 of the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 4076.
Representative Shetterly.
Yes.
Shetterly has articulately moved "you know what we mean" into House Bill 4078. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Mr. Chair, Representative Bates.
I would move House Bill 4078 as amended to the floor.
The due pass recommendation.
Representative Bates has moved House Bill 4078 as amended to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections?
Mr. Chairman.
Let the record show that Representative Morgan and Hayden object.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Just let me reflect mine, the courtesy vote to the chair to move the bill forward.
Let mine be reflected as a courtesy vote to Representative Shetterly and to myself to get this to the floor. Any other objections? Seeing none? So ordered. We will close the work session on House Bill 4078, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 4076. Anyone in attendance wishing to testify on House Bill 4076? This is the referral to November. Seeing none, the public hearing is closed, and we will open a work session on House Bill 4076. Okay, this should be downhill from here. House Bill 4078 should now, the numbers should now be consistent with 4076. This is the referral. We've got dates.
Is there a
Representative?
Have we acted on the amendment of 4076? Or maybe that's not an amendment, but is the corporate, where's the corporate language?
Is the corporate language in there already?
4076 was the early bill.
Yeah, it may not actually have a new language in this moment.
Actually, the amendment that you conceptually amended, dash 5 to 4076, were designed to put the corporate into House Bill 4076.
So we need to
move. So that amendment would make it consistent with House Bill 4078 as it is now.
Mr. Chairman, I move to amend 4076 with the dash 5 amendment.
Does that include the lien?
We don't need the lien.
Oh, yeah.
Including.
Wait, let me take you up to the dash 5. I can't find my copy.
Here.
I have, I mean, this is just impossible. I don't have those.
Aha.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, we're going to get into a long discussion here, I know, again. But we need to probably conceptually amend this the same way as we conceptually amended the last one, because otherwise we will be reducing in this amendment the term of the increase from 3 years to 2 years. Because that's what's actually in the
But the rates would remain consistent.
The rates would remain consistent, but the term would not.
And we need 1 through 4 out. That's all we need. It's your motion. All we need is on 6 through 22.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move to amend 4076 with the dash 5 amendment and to have the dash 5 amendment conceptually amended to include only lines 6 through 22.
Representative Devlin has moved that House Bill 4076 be amended with the dash 5 as represented only by line 6 through 22 on page 1. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the order. need one more amendment. Paul, could you discuss the dash three?
Mr. Chair, the dash three would make 4076 consistent with 4078 by including the waiver of senators that was not in the original.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin. Mr. Chairman, I move to amend 4076 as it has already been previously conceptually amended to include the dash three amendment to the 4076.
Representative Devlin has moved to amend House Bill 4076 with the dash three. Any discussion? Hold on. You okay? Representative Devlin has moved House Bill 4076 to be amended by the dash three. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Who wants to move it?
Is it ready to go?
The chair courteously and as a courtesy moves House Bill 4076 as amended by lines 6 through 22 on the dash 5 and by the dash 3s in its entirety to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? You object?
Second. You're moving a referral to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
The chair did that. Very curly and Representative Bates, Representative Devlin, Representative Johnson show his objections. See no other objections. House Bill 4076, as amended, is passed the floor with two pass recommendation.
Chairman, for the record, my vote may be the same on the floor as it is now, it may be different.
Thank you for sharing. Here, here's the added up to the fact.
I think Representative Devlin speaks for me as well.
I can see that there is going to be an issue of carriers on House Bill 4076. So, the chair, accepting the responsibility of the chair, will carry House Bill 4076. Which one of you lovely individuals is going to carry 4078?
It looks like Representative Bates, otherwise known as Mo, will carry, a.k.a. Mo, will carry 4078.
Alan, I don't know how you and I get in these positions.
I know.
As often. As we do.
We do. I remember 3 a.m. in the morning and special session, whatever it was, a bonding bill. For a year.
What is the pleasure of the speaker? To you want us to keep blowing ahead here, or you want to get... We've got a few other things.
These bills on the floor,
they're going to that
run them as soon as possible. So to get them over to the Senate today is my pleasure.
What's the pleasure of us here right now?
I don't see any. You made an amendment to the elections bill, 4075. That needs to wait here to see what happens on the floor. Go to. Isn't that correct? Mm-hmm. Then you have some work for us to do that should be rather definitive and allow us to make decisions about where we go from here in the next several days.
We have a vote next day.
Yeah. So what do we have? Do you have a cut bill before you? Do you not?
But the cut bill is contingent upon what happens on 478,
right? If you're in that pay bill.
to be adjusted, so I think we need to put these bills on the floor and go vote on them. They are going there as fast as technology can carry them. No, if the straight-up bill were to pass, the ballot language, that bill could be amended to be your February election bill.
Forty-seven-five has already been amended to do that.
Yeah, we're going to leave that here. We're leaving it here. Just see what happens.
Okay. If the 4078 fails, we don't need 4075.
Right.
So the 78 is going to the floor. 76 is going to the floor. And 4074 is going to the floor.
Okay. You'll ultimately 4075.
One way or the other.
We were happy to accommodate putting that amendment in there before a vote. We will recess the House Retrospection Committee on Budget Restoration until the call of the chair.